If you're struggling, if you're feeling empty, even if you feel bitter, let me encourage you to turn towards Bethlehem. Turn towards the bread of life. Turn again towards Jesus Christ.
If you got to change your name today, what would you choose? Maybe you already have an idea of a name you like, or maybe you're very happy with the one you already have. In Ruth chapter 1, a woman called Naomi decides to change her name to Mara, not because she likes the sound of it, but because of its meaning. The word means bitter, and it points to the suffering she's been through. Let's find out more. Hello and welcome to Word Alive, a Bible teaching programme brought to you by Good News Broadcasting. Nestled between the book of Judges and the book of 1 Samuel in your Bible, you find a beautiful little love story called Ruth. That's what we're going to be exploring together over the next month. Our speaker will be Bible teacher Tom Ward. Today he'll be walking through chapter 1. I'll be reading it in sections as we go. But for now, here's Tom.
Thanks, Mel. I thought we could take a few weeks to look at what the expositor's commentary calls the most beautiful love story ever told. It was written well over 3,000 years ago. We aren't fully sure who wrote it, but I can tell you that it wasn't Charlotte Bronte, as much as you might think it was. Anyway, what's important to see is that this is a true historical account. Yes, it has the feeling of a short story with drama at the start and then everything coming good in the end. Yes, it has a rugged man and a young maiden falling in love. But the book of Ruth isn't primarily about romance. It is ultimately about the goodness of God shown in the lives of three specific people: Naomi, Boaz, and, you guessed it, Ruth. So here are the first two verses of Ruth chapter 1.
During the time of the judges, there was a famine in the land. A man left Bethlehem in Judah with his wife and two sons to live in the land of Moab for a while. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the land of Moab and settled there.
So this beautiful love story is set in the time of the judges. This was not a pretty time for the people of God. You only need to glance through that book to see quite clearly that it was a time of disobedience and God's judgment, with a few kind of classic Bible characters thrown in, like Gideon, Samson, and Ehud. Big up my left-handed brothers. So that's the context for the book of Ruth. It's a dark time for Israel because they're trying to get by on their own. This is a regular theme throughout the Old Testament. God's people would start to stray and fall into sinful patterns. God would patiently wait for them to return to him. They would keep sinning, keep ignoring God, going further away from him. And then God would often give them over to their enemies who were trying to pursue them. God would remove his protection from them. And pretty quickly, they would cry out and God would intervene. God would rescue them. And this was a cycle that we see happen throughout the Old Testament. So this, again, was what was happening at the time that Ruth's story happens. During the time of the judges, there was a famine in the land. If they went against God and his commands, one of the ways that God disciplined them was through a lack of food. So it seems fair to say that God's people are being rebuked by him in the book of Ruth because of their unfaithfulness. And this includes the family of Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons. Kids have got to eat, and so at first glance, it seems that Elimelech has done the right thing. He has no food, and he's pretty sure that Moab does, so he sets out to go towards where the food is. But when we look closely, there are two issues with this. Firstly, running away from God's discipline never works, and number two, running away to Moab is not a good idea if you're an Israelite. Let's take a little bit of time to think of those two points then. So, running away from God's discipline is never a good idea. To hide from God or to run from God is to forget that he is all-powerful and all-knowing. He sees all things and knows all things before we've done them. So for Elimelech, as part of the people of God, the best thing for him to do would have been to stay in Bethlehem and ride it out. The people needed to collectively confess their sin and cry out to God for mercy. Bethlehem literally means the house of bread. God is a righteous judge. He disciplines those he loves. He won't be mocked. We reap what we sow. But He is also a provider. And Elimelech seemed to forget this. And this leads to our second point. Running away to Moab is not a good idea if you're an Israelite. Moab was a tribe founded from the incest of Lot and his daughters in Genesis 19. That is not a good start. They worshipped false gods, the main one of them being Chemosh, which was like a fish god. That's not good either. God had forbidden Israelites to marry Moabites, and Moabites were not to enter the assembly of God. The Moabites were one of the tribes that oppressed the Israelites, and so relations between them were frosty at best. God wanted the Israelites to focus their worship on him and not be led astray, and so he'd made his feelings pretty clear. And here comes Elimelech and uproots his family and heads to the closest heathen town. It's like when Abraham and Lot separate in the book of Genesis, and there's this little phrase at the end of one of the verses where it says, "And Lot settled in Sodom." And when we read that today, you know, we think that verse is just full of baggage, isn't it? We want to scream at the pages through the ages and say to Lot, "Lot, don't do it." And it's pretty similar with Moab. I think this scenario shows how desperate Elimelech was, but it was a terrible mistake. This is verse 3-5.
Naomi's husband Elimelech died, and she was left with her two sons. Her sons took Moabite women as their wives. One was named Orpah, and the second was named Ruth. After they lived in Moab about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two children and without her husband.
Naomi has moved with her husband to get away from a famine in their hometown, and she actually loses far more than that. She loses her husband and her two children. Now, the scripture does not explain whether these deaths are coincidental or whether it was God's judgment on them. Elimelech had moved his family to a very dangerous place, dangerous for their faith because he had put them in a culture that was dedicated to worshipping false gods. And his sons had gone against what God had commanded and married women from Moab. Now, it's important to state that this isn't about race. God is not against people from different races or countries marrying. He loves all people everywhere, and he loves marriage. But he doesn't want his people to marry people from other religions or no religion, because those couples aren't going to agree on the most important aspect of their lives. It's not racial, but religious. This is shown later in the book when Ruth, a Moabite, marries an Israelite. But by this time, Ruth is worshipping Yahweh. So it is blessed by God. Now, I think there's an obvious application here for us today, isn't there? If you're a Christian, it would be unwise to marry an atheist or a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Mormon or whatever. You can marry anybody from any country you want, but to yoke yourself to someone who believes and worships a different God, that is going to make things very difficult. We know there is only one true living God, but many people worship false gods. But saying that, it is a very different story. If you've got married before becoming a Christian, I know a couple like this. They got married in their early 20s, and then the wife became a Christian at around 30, and her husband didn't. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 talks very clearly about this. It basically says, don't leave your unbelieving husband or wife. If they're willing to stay with you, stay married. So Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion die. God certainly has the right to judge, but the scripture doesn't state whether it was a judgment from God. It focuses more on Naomi. She is now left with no husband and no sons. We can obviously sympathize with her grief, but it's easy to forget how much this puts Naomi in danger. She has no one to provide for her. She has no one to protect her. To be a widow in those days could be disastrous. This is what Baker's Evangelical Dictionary of Biblical Theology says about widows at the time. The loss of a husband in ancient Israel was normally a social and economic tragedy. In a generally patriarchal culture, the death of a husband usually meant a type of cultural death as well. Although the denotation of a widow referred to a woman whose husband had died, because of the social impact, the word quickly acquired the connotation of a person living a marginal existence in extreme poverty. Since she was in an extremely vulnerable economic position, she became the prime target of exploitation. End quote. So Naomi is a foreigner in a foreign land, a stranger in a strange land. She has no husband. She has no sons. This is very bleak. What she does have, though, is two daughter-in-laws from a tribe she isn't meant to really associate with. She actually sees it as a burden. Let's keep reading. This is verse 6 to verse 10.
She and her daughters-in-law prepared to leave the land of Moab, because she had heard in Moab that the Lord had paid attention to his people's need by providing them food. She left the place where she had been living, accompanied by her two daughters-in-law, and travelled along the road leading back to the land of Judah. She said to them, "Each of you, go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show faithful love to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord enable each of you to find security in the house of your new husband." She kissed them, and they wept loudly. "No," they said to her, "we will go with you to your people."
Naomi hears that God has heard the cry of the Israelites and has provided food. That's interesting, isn't it? Let me read you the second half of verse 6 again. She had heard in Moab that the Lord had paid attention to his people's need by providing them food. So those in Moab had heard what Yahweh, the true and living God, had done. They were interested in how the Israelites were getting on, and they knew that God had helped his people. I just find that really intriguing, that these Moabites would know and be interested in what was happening with the Israelites. So Naomi is heading back to Bethlehem, but tells her daughters-in-law that they're better off going back to their own mums to see if they can marry again. Naomi hasn't seen much positive signs in her life and doesn't think that she'll be of any use to the young women. But verse 10 says, "No," they said to her, "we will go with you and to your people." Now, this is incredible. Two Moabite women who have lost their husbands and want to go with Naomi, the Israelite. There's real affection here for their mother-in-law. There's a bit of a cliche, isn't there, about terrible mother-in-laws in our society. I personally am very blessed to have an amazing mother-in-law. I love chatting with her, and it's a joy going down to London to stay with her. But I know that many people do struggle. But Ruth and Orpah don't have anything to gain by staying with Naomi. They are leaving their country of birth, where they fit in, where they're known, where they are welcome, where they have lived, where they've grown up. They're laying that all aside to follow Naomi. It's a great reminder, I think, that although the Moabites as a collective were dangerous to the Israelites in terms of war on the one hand and then leading them into idolatry on the other hand, but these individuals, Ruth and Orpah, seem like amazing women and actually come off far better than Naomi in this chapter. This is verse 11 to verse 18.
But Naomi replied, "Return home, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Am I able to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. Go on, for I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me to have a husband tonight and to bear sons, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Would you restrain yourselves from remarrying? No, my daughters. My life is much too bitter for you to share, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." Again they wept loudly, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her God. Follow your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Do not persuade me to leave you or go back and not follow you, for wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May Yahweh punish me, and do so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped trying to persuade her.
Thanks so much for that. "For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." Those are familiar verses, aren't they? You've probably heard them read at a wedding ceremony at some point, which seems a little bit odd when you know the context is actually, you know, a daughter-in-law speaking to a mother-in-law. But still, they really are beautiful verses. Naomi had managed to shake off Orpah, but Ruth was having none of it. Naomi had tried her hardest. She said, "Look, I haven't got any more sons to give you." Naomi clearly thought the women were really only coming with her for what they could gain. But Ruth is committed to Naomi. She's committed without anything in return. It's not like Naomi is a joyful, charismatic woman who is great fun to be around. She also didn't seem to be a sage of wisdom who Ruth could, you know, soak up loads of wisdom from and kind of better herself. No, it seems that this simple Moabite woman who had married into the family was committed to that family. She feels responsible to look after what is left of her late husband's family. And this is a great lesson for us in society today, because people are living longer. Many older people now are needing to be cared for. And as a society, I don't think we're doing a great job of it. I think care workers as a profession is incredibly stretched anyway. We don't seem to have the resources. We don't seem to want to pay people well in that profession. I remember a number of years ago, Esther Ransom set up a charity called Silverline, which is a call line for elderly people who are lonely to give them somebody to chat with. It's estimated that there are over a million people in the UK who are elderly and suffer with loneliness. We should be caring for the older generations. We should be protecting them and not making them feel like a burden. There's a scary rise in older people wanting to end their lives, or people with dementia or with a terminal illness. These people should be respected and honoured in society. Our end-of-life care, I don't think, is all that good often, and I'm worried about the direction that we are heading. You know, even things discussed in Parliament quite recently about assisted suicide. I mean, that's a whole other ball game. But Ruth shows us, I think, a great example of someone passionately committed to family. She commits herself to Naomi. You could call it a covenant, really. She uses such strong language. May Yahweh punish me and do so severely if anything but death separates you and me. So Ruth is committed to her mother-in-law, but also she's heard enough about Israel's God to want to follow him as well. This just blows my mind, really. Ruth had married into the family, and so she would have known the reason that Elimelech had moved his family to Moab. And then Elimelech dies, and then so too does Ruth's husband and Orpah's. Now, let's be honest, this doesn't seem like the best sales pitch to believe in Yahweh, does it? This seems like the opposite of the prosperity gospel. Why would Ruth want Naomi's God to be her God? Because Yahweh is the one true living God, not a made-up fish God that the Moabites worshipped. Naomi showed Ruth real faith in a real God, even when Naomi was going through a terribly difficult season. Even though she wants to be called bitter when she returns to Bethlehem, Ruth has seen something of the true God that she believes in, despite her circumstances. Ruth didn't get to decide what God is like any more than you or I do. We can't mold God in our own image. Ruth glimpsed something, and it was worth giving up the comforts of home to pursue, because I believe God had been pursuing her. Let this be an encouragement in your everyday evangelism. Sometimes we feel obligated to put on a happy face, don't we? Even when things are tough. But Naomi did no such thing. She didn't try and get Ruth and Orpah to come with her. She didn't say, look, come to Bethlehem and see how good God is to his people. She said, look, you ain't going to want to come with me. But Ruth did. If we're honest and open, I believe that God will do the rest. Yes, we need to be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have. We need to be winsome and wise and clear and concise. But if life is rubbish, tell the truth. Could it be that our lack of honesty in evangelism holds us back? I've had so many people in my local community that say, look, I can't be a Christian like you because I'm not good enough. And I'm there thinking, you have no idea. Well, the reason they have no idea is obviously because I don't tell them. I want to look good. I want to look like I live a really good life. I want people to think that following God is a breeze, but it's not, and it never will be. Let's tell the truth. Who knows what God will do, even through the hardest times of our life? If we're honest with God and we're still talking with him, we can be honest with others, as long as we cling to the Lord. It might not be pretty, but God can still use it. That's good news, isn't it? Verse 19 to verse 22.
The two of them travelled until they came to Bethlehem. When they entered Bethlehem, the whole town was excited about their arrival, and the local women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara," she answered, "for the Almighty has made me very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has pronounced judgment on me? and the Almighty has afflicted me." So Naomi came back from the land of Moab with her daughter-in-law Ruth, the Moabitess. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Indeed. Thanks, Mel. It's John Piper who said, "Bitterness is a powerful blindness. Naomi is unaware of how God has been with her through her trials and grief. She's unaware of how, even though she feels that she's lost everything, she is still blessed. When we face difficult times, we can be drained of the joy that we should have in Christ. We can forget that God can and will work through any situation in our lives for our good. There are a few hints, I think, in those verses that Mel just read. Let me quickly point out four of them as we come into land. Number one, Naomi is welcomed back to Bethlehem. She's been away for many years. This could have led to resentment from some of those who stayed. As it was, Naomi is welcomed back. That's a great blessing. Number two, Naomi has Ruth. Although she's tried to deter her, Ruth was having none of it. But Naomi has no idea what a blessing Ruth was and will be. In fact, in Ruth chapter 4, verse 15, I know that we're jumping ahead here a little bit, but the women of Bethlehem say to Naomi, "For your daughter-in-law who loves you is better to you than seven sons." Now, in a male-dominated society where having boys was seen as massively better than having girls, this is high praise. Number three, Naomi has hope. And there's that great verse at the end of chapter 1. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. It just so happened that they arrived at this specific time of the year. This verse is a taster of what's to come. This barley harvest is where the romance of Boaz and Ruth will start. The barley harvest is where God provides abundantly for Naomi, a woman who had fled from God and disobeyed his law. Naomi has hope, whether she really realizes it or not. And fourth and finally, Naomi has faith. She has somehow clung onto her faith. Yes, it wasn't pretty, and she basically told everybody to call her bitter. She hasn't quite given up on God just yet. Her faith was bruised, her faith was beaten down, but there's something there. She knows Yahweh. Despite the devastation in her life, she is heading back to Bethlehem. She says, "I left Bethlehem full and came back empty." Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because the reason she left was because she was physically empty. There was no food. She tried to outrun the judgment of God. But in Moab, she lost so much more than food. She lost her husband and sons. And now she's bitter. She's broken. She's grieved. But let's cut Naomi some slack. She has gone through real hardship. She has tasted real grief. But the fire hasn't gone out. There are still some embers of faith there. Although she feels empty, she's heading in the right direction. Like Jonah, Naomi went in the wrong direction. Jonah went to Tarsus and Naomi went to Moab. But then Jonah came to his senses and did go to Nineveh. And Naomi here comes to her senses and heads back home, like the prodigal son of Luke 15. As I said earlier, Bethlehem means the house of bread. And she will be filled. And for us today, we see the significance of that verse even more, don't we? Because in the house of bread, many years later, would be born the bread of life himself, Jesus Christ. The one who died for you and me to bring us back to God. The one who went to the cross full and died empty. Who experienced grief. The grief of being betrayed and denied and disowned and deserted. The grief of facing death that he didn't deserve. But then 3 days later, he rose again, and so all who come to him can be filled, fully satisfied. So let me say to you today, if you're struggling, if you're feeling empty, even if you feel bitter, let me encourage you to turn towards Bethlehem. Turn towards the bread of life. Turn again towards Jesus Christ. He has broad shoulders. He wants to hear your struggles, your complaints. He knows the hardships that you face. He knows the pain that you've been through. And you know what? Going to him won't make all of those things instantly disappear. But with Christ, you will have faith and hope like Naomi did. This Christian life can be a bitter pill to swallow, but Jesus has you. Cling to him today.
Thanks, Tom. You've been listening to a programme called A Bitter Pill. and it's now on our website, gmba.net, and also available as a podcast in all the usual places. We also have a free resource we're making available, a book called For His Glory, which is full of inspiring messages from the Good News Broadcasting Conference over the years. To get your copy, just send us an email to info@gmba.net or call 01777 817138. That's 01777 817 138. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week when we'll explore Ruth chapter 2.